From KPFK Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The U.S. Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, issued a warning about potential interference in the midterm elections on Tuesday in his testimony to the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. In referring to the 2016 general election, Coates said, quote, "There should be no doubt that Russia perceived that its past efforts as successful and views the 2018 U.S. midterm elections as a potential target for Russian midterm operations." Well, the warning comes weeks after one of the world's most popular social media platforms, Facebook, changed its secret algorithm for how news feeds appear. Facebook had come under fire from Congress for not catching fake news posts and provocative ad content from Russian sources that apparently helped artificially polarize the electorate in 2016. But Facebook's new emphasis on posts from family and friends over news publications may have the opposite effect. Just days ago, Brazil's largest newspaper announced it would no longer publish news reports to its Facebook page. The paper's editor said, quote, "In effectively banning professional journalism from its pages in favor of personal content and opening space for fake news to proliferate, Facebook became inhospitable terrain for those who want to offer quality content like ours," end of quote. My guest is Ramesh Srinivasan. He's the director of the Digital Cultures Lab and associate professor of Information Studies and Design and Media Arts at the University of California, Los Angeles. He's the author of Whose Global Village? Rethinking How Technology Shapes Our World. And he is also the co-author with Adam Fisher of the new book, After the Internet. Welcome back to the program, Ramesh.
Hi, Sonali. Nice to speak to you again.
So we've had this ongoing conversation about the role that these technologies are playing in our cultures. And Facebook, we know over the past few years, has effectively evolved into the main way in which Americans were getting their news. Because in line with that, and using the social media platform, news outlets like ours, as well as big ones like the Brazilian newspaper Folha and others, cultivated their Facebook pages to make it a new distribution, another distribution platform for their news articles. And with one tweak, Facebook sort of upended that this January. As far as you understand, what has Facebook done? Mark Zuckerberg said he wanted to encourage meaningful interactions. And why did it do it?
I mean, all of these responses are like putting small band-aids on an exploding balloon. So, you know, the air is going to keep leaking in other parts of the balloon. And let me explain why. So, you know, Facebook, like many of the other big Silicon Valley technologies, is optimized for its capital valuation, right? So, in other words, it's optimized based on the large numbers of people that use the technology and essentially are addicted to the technology. It monetizes user attention and also user data. So insofar as there are no threats to that business model, Facebook will be willing to make small-scale changes. But the small-scale changes don't actually, on an underlying level, address the fundamental systemic issue, which is that we as users of Facebook have very little knowledge about why we see what we see. We don't know what determines the credibility or the filtering or the ordering or the visibility of the posts that we see. So what we're seeing occurring in this, you know, sort of Facebook policy change, which is not at all transparent, is them basically saying, hey, we don't really see ourselves as a legitimate or credible source for news-based information. So instead, we're going to atomize this to focus more on your friends and your family. The problem is if you interact with your friends or your family, you can still be exposed to all sorts of misinformation. You can be exposed to misinformation or faulty or fake news information that I might post. You know, I'm your friend on Facebook, Sonali. Say I post some information that's false. It's still going to be exposed to you. And more generally, this is Facebook basically making a decision that they're not going to really be transparent or clear about how they vet more, if you will, traditional journalistic or even blogosphere-based news sources. So again, what we're having is a kind of a typical sort of reactive approach by Facebook that doesn't address the systemic nature of the problem. It is optimized for economic, decentralized, user scalable use, right? Scalable access. And it's not willing to interrogate that business model around these issues that are coming up.
What you're saying is that in a way, things got to the way they were because Facebook was prioritizing monetization for itself over everything else. And maybe it realized that if it were to actually take on the task that Congress and others were giving it, which is find a way to not be such a proliferator of fake news, that would impact its business model so much it simply wouldn't be worth it. And rather than risk impacting its business model, it has simply decided to give up, which is what the editor of the San Francisco Chronicle wrote in an open letter to Facebook, to Mark Zuckerberg. And this is the editor-in-chief of the San Francisco Chronicle, Audrey Cooper. She basically said, "You gave up," to Mark Zuckerberg. And this, of course, is possibly going to have the opposite effect, that suddenly people are not going to rely on Facebook for news. I mean, I can say from our personal experience as well, my program worked very hard to get people to like us on our Facebook page. And now that effort we put into investing people to get, you know, to like our page is not paying off at all, because we're getting extremely little engagement. And so it's just all gone down the drain. All the work that legitimate news sources did to use to play ball with Facebook has gone down the drain.
I mean, the source of the fake news problem isn't based on Facebook sharing legitimate news sources or journalistic stories. The source of the fake news problem is that Facebook is addictive, and Facebook is privileging content independent of where it comes from that will maintain our addiction and maintain our attention. And that is the underlying business model right there, because attention and therefore addiction correlates to greater engagement with the platform, which means more data. And you know, when you have one's attention, you can imagine how much economic power that can correlate to or be assessed into. So this is really, I don't really see this as any sort of significant step at all. As I mentioned earlier, I could choose to spread misinformation as a user of Facebook, and that would be still made visible to you, Sonali. I don't think excluding, you know, your show or this Brazilian newspaper or the San Francisco Chronicle, or at least diminishing their visibility, is going to have any effect at all on the fake news component. Because
could it have an opposite effect? Because it's exactly. in a way it's now clamped down on legitimate news sources, giving more free rein to fake news to proliferate between family and friends.
Precisely, because what engenders the virality of fake news is the kind of dopamine receptor hitting addictive quality of that news. So of course Facebook is going to say that we're also clamping down on blogosphere news sources, perhaps sources like InfoWars and so on. But that is really not the nature of what allows this content to go viral. It's not InfoWars posts that go viral. It's us posting InfoWars posts that go viral. So the ultimate issue here is Facebook still making the decision that they don't want to be communicative or transparent or accountable about why you see what you see, what allows content to go viral, and giving us opportunities to vet and engage with the platform in ways that best support us. So I would like to know why I am seeing your posts based on the content that is being revealed. And I don't get any exposure to any of that with Facebook, regardless of what steps it takes here.
The confusion around how Facebook decides what it wants to do also results in misinformation about Facebook itself spreading, as the recent viral meme illustrates. Everybody's Facebook, my Facebook feed at least, was completely swamped by my many well-meaning friends, many of them very intelligent people, who were posting this reposting what they saw on other people's friends about to Facebook, apparently only showing you posts from 25 or 26 friends, and then encouraging people to leave a comment or a quick hello, etc., or like on that Facebook post to try to control how you view your news feed. I mean, it turns out it was a total hoax. Snopes covered it, exposed it. Several news outlets have exposed it. There is no such thing as Facebook only restricting your feed to 26 friends. But doesn't that to you suggest that Facebook's black box approach to its news feed algorithm confuses the very people that use it? And that's a problem.
It's a huge problem. I mean, yet it's not a problem that is going to change ultimately what Facebook does unless our attention and our addiction to the platform is somehow diminished, right?
Facebook may be helping us do just that, because I have to say I use it primarily to get news, and I've used it less since they changed the way that news shows up. I'm hearing from people that I don't really want to hear from, no offense to anybody. But those journalists that and the journalism news pieces that I was relying on from Facebook have gone down. And so I'm just using it less. And maybe that'll happen.
Well, you use Facebook as a source of legitimate news to look at, as an aggregator of various, news content that you're looking at. But a lot of us don't necessarily use that. Right. But the most important point I want to make is what Facebook specializes in, and all the big tech companies do this, is what we call A/B testing, right? So they're basically going to introduce this kind of new version of the algorithm to some of its users and not to others. And they're going to look at which sort of the two options is optimized for what they actually most want and need, and their whole valuation is based upon, which is our attention and our data. And the other point I want to make is this is not, even though we're talking about Facebook, this is not a unique issue to Facebook. All of us know about the YouTube wormhole maybe many of us experience. The Guardian wrote a really good article just last week about how when you sort of, you go onto YouTube and you keep looking at the recommended links after you look at a given piece of video, you end up getting into more and more extreme sorts of spaces that are more fictional, that are more absurd, but something about it maintains our attention, right? So if our attention and our addiction to these platforms were somehow diminished, then Facebook would have to be more transparent and accountable because it would be threatening to its bottom line. But this is at the end of the day a business, and it's a business based on an attention economy.
Right. However, we have reached the point where so many people are using social media platforms to communicate with one another that some, including you, have said that we maybe ought to start treating these spaces as a commons where we should have the right to understand how they're manipulating us and to demand that it function the way we want it to. I mean, way back in the day when Facebook first started, the simple idea was that you get your friends to join you on the social media platform. Every post that they made showed up in your newsfeed in a linear fashion. Every time somebody posted, it showed up in your newsfeed. Another friend posts, it shows up in your newsfeed. It's just simply a linear aggregation. No complicated filter there, no optimizing anything. And Facebook realized, wait a minute, why should we just show people news posts or posts and feeds from the friends that they've chosen to interact with? Why don't we try to predict what people want to see and shape the news feed so that it optimizes how long they stay there, because that will make us more money. And that greed, that desire to optimize monetization is what drives that algorithmic change, right? I mean, this is what we need to sort of keep exposing about Facebook if we want to step away from it and realize that they don't, this is not a social media platform anymore. It's simply a way to make Mark Zuckerberg more billions of dollars.
It's an attention economy, and the biggest five tech companies together are worth over $3 trillion. They come from a very limited region of the world, the United States West Coast, and they have billions of people connected to their various platforms or the platforms that they own. And they clearly are companies that are profiting off of public attention and public exposure and global exposure. So as a result, they have transgressed out of being simply for-profit entertainment systems or, you know, simple kind of buying, selling kinds of transactions. They become the places that we inhabit. And so they profit off of being these places that are commonses, right? So they're sort of masquerading as commonses for us, independent of where we are and who we are, is exactly what drives their valuation. So given that, and given that the kind of economic optimization by which these platforms are built is creating all sorts of other problems, they have to be accountable to those problems. They have to be accountable to the externalities of solely optimizing a business for economic value.
So then let's turn to the fact that there are people who have been involved in shaping Facebook that want to see it be a different way. There's one in particular, former Facebook and Google employees have come together to create a Center for Humane Technology, which they say will be aimed at fighting for a greater understanding of and controls on tech companies' ill effects. Is this a good way for us to move forward? Because like it or not, the Facebooks and Twitters and Instagrams are here to stay. People use them. These companies have gotten big because they found a way to get people involved. And so maybe now, rather than demand that they adhere to our will, because, you know, it's hard to do that. We have millions of people on Facebook. We can't all agree. These sorts of watchdog groups can help shape Facebook and help us ask questions about it?
Well, to me, you know, there are a couple symptoms of the problem that we've diagnosed now in our conversation, Sonali, that, you know, that these organizations are attempting to deal with, but they are just really small symptoms of the underlying problem. So, you know, let's talk about the Center for Humane Technology. This is, you know, Tristan Harris, who's, you know, made the rounds. He's on 60 Minutes. I've seen him all over the place in the media. And the concerns that they have are legitimate, about childhood, you know, youth addiction, you know, effects on our education and our educational systems. And I agree with those concerns. But to me, again, this is a very small symptom of a much larger systemic problem, which is the transgression into our personal, our public, our everyday, every moment lives in ways that we don't understand and have no visibility around, right? So similarly, I think of the Russia situation very similarly, right? This is a spectacular failure. It's a failure for which Facebook has apologized. I'm sure Facebook will be investing money, as I've been reading about recently, to try to support, you know, educational systems, school systems, youth education, and so on. But this doesn't necessarily mean that they're willing to do what is most necessary, which is try to figure out a way to economically sustain themselves without doing so in a complete black-boxed manner.
Well, finally, Ramesh, do you think that people are going to, because Facebook did see a downward trend in how long people remained engaged after they had this algorithmic change, which is just the opposite of what they want as well. What do you think Facebook's next step will be? Because they lose money when people remain less engaged, and they clearly have a terrible time trying to predict what people want from Facebook, even though they, you know, essentially need that if they want to stay profitable. So what do you think Facebook will do next? Will it try to do better?
Well, I think it's going to be this A/B testing for a while, right? They're going to see whether they can maintain the same amount of attention and click-throughs and clickbait kind of activity that provides them with data and that allows them to convince their investors that they are worth what they are worth, right? So it's important to note, Sonali, that even after all the, like, you know, the Russian situation and the terrible PR that Facebook received, that Facebook's stock valuations went up, not down after that, right? So it's important to recognize that something underlying with Facebook is working. So if this algorithm change is actually going to, in a fundamental way, actually impact the data and attention and uses, you know, all over the world of people, of their platform, they won't go for it, right? So I'm actually skeptical about what actually is going to get changed. I see this and many other activities that Facebook engages in as sort of, again, patchwork PR kinds of engagements. But at the end of the day, if this doesn't threaten Facebook's bottom line, which is its valuation, which is correlated to its advertising revenues and profits, it's not going to make any difference at all. So the company is going to have to try to ask new questions. And these questions are, how can we be profitable, maybe not quite to the same extent, or maybe even to the same extent, without having to exploit addiction, without having to exploit attention? And there's no question that we as users are addicted to those platforms, and they did identify something that is addictive and attention grabbing. But are there other ways? Because these companies need to realize, and we all are realizing, that it's not just about the economic effects, it's all the other effects, the other externalities of these platforms and their immersion into our lives that are creating all sorts of dysfunctional effects. When you control the machines that have billions of people connected to those machines from across the world, you have power over those machines. And those machines are not just going to produce outcomes that are good for you, they might also produce outcomes that are bad for everybody else.
Ramesh, I want to thank you as always for joining us. We hope to have you back on again in the future. Thanks so much.
I love being on. Thank you, Sonali. Appreciate it.
Ramesh Srinivasan is the director of the Digital Cultures Lab and associate professor of Information Studies and Design and Media Arts at UCLA. His books include Who's Global Village? Rethinking How Technology Shapes Our World and After the Internet. We've been discussing Facebook's new and mysterious algorithm change. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.